Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned earlier, I support both the items we are voting on today, both the PCAOB five-year strategic plan for 2009 through 2013 and the board's annual budget for 2010, with the understanding, as you made clear, that prospective board members may amend either document. Looking first at the strategic plan, we explained the board's roadmap of objectives and goals that we will pursue to continue to fulfill our mission to protect investors. The founding principle of the strategic plan is the PCAOB's mission statement as derived from the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, to oversee the auditors of public companies in order to protect the interests of investors and further the public interest in the preparation of informative, fair, and independent audits. The plan talks about the board's core values and discusses at length the key environmental factors and risks the PCAOB and the firms we oversee face in the coming years. In short, the plan spells out our thinking about how we intend to protect investors. As you've laid out so well, Mr. Chairman, the 2010 budget before us calls for an increase of 16% over the 2009 budget. Following a year when investors incurred tremendous losses due to the financial crisis on Wall Street and in the housing markets, investors are looking to regulators, including the PCAOB, for reassurance about the quality of financial reporting in the marketplace and to see that their interests are safeguarded. For example, the SEC has experienced a call for more robust oversight and regulation, which is expected to result in a substantial increase in its funding over the next 5 years. The 2010 PCAOB budget also reflects an increase in demand on its resources. The budget is a product of extensive discussion and negotiation among all board members and division leaders, as well as the SEC. All division leaders were asked whether they were satisfied that they could accomplish their necessary tasks within this budget, and they all answered yes. The 2010 budget total is $183.3 million, and anticipate staffing levels of 636 by year-end, up 20% from the 2009 budget projection of 531 staff, and 10% from the actual expected year-end 2009 staffing level of 576. The bulk of the funding increases from the 2009 budget are in registration inspections, as they have been every year to date, up $17.4 million or 25%. After that, increases follow in enforcement, up $2.8 million or 23%, the Office of Chief Auditor, up $1.1 million or 16%, and the Office of Research and Analysis, up $0.7 million or 10%. These spending increases over 2009 budgeted levels generally cover an increase in staffing. Inspection staff will increase by 31% next year and account for more than half of all PCAOB employees. This staffing level is necessary to respond to the heightened risk environment for audits over the past 2 years. In addition, increased staffing is needed to implement and enforce new annual and special reporting rules, as well as to respond to SEC recommendations intended to strengthen the inspection program. The staffing increase will extend to our international inspection program as well. This program remains a focus of the board, particularly with respect to enhancing our international inspection methodologies and issuing more timely inspection reports. Similarly, the 2010 budget reflects increases in staffing in the Division of Enforcement Investigations and the Office of Research and Analysis. These increases also are in response to the increase in risk in financial reporting related to the current economy. The board's enforcement program is the board's main tool for holding auditors accountable for serious audit failures. Our enforcement staff is called to investigate registered firms' alleged auditing failures around the world. The investigations of large, complex audits, including those relating to the credit crisis, are resource-intensive exercises. In addition, as persons chosen to litigate the board's disciplinary proceedings, additional enforcement resources are needed to bring those proceedings to their appropriate completion. And in these difficult financial times, the collection of reliable and meaningful data and the identification and analysis of audit risks revealed by that data are vital to the board's inspection and enforcement processes. The Office of Research and Analysis is responsible for looking around the corner and identifying emerging audit risks. Its risk assessment has become an indispensable part of the PCAOB's risk-based inspection program. The financial crisis only heightens the importance of the vital role played by AURA in supporting the activities of the board and its various divisions. Staffing will also increase in the Office of Chief Auditor to help it achieve its aggressive standard-setting agenda. The agenda was developed as a result of issues identified in inspection, registration, and enforcement as needing our immediate and future attention. Additionally, the agenda includes recommendations from the U.S. Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, such as the engagement partner signature. The agenda also was influenced by developments of accounting standard setters and others whose actions will have a potential impact on auditing standards, such as FASB's proposed standard on going concern. The staffing increase is also needed so that we are in a position to respond to new issues that will likely need our attention, such as establishing standards for auditors of broker-dealers. The budget also reflects an increase in funding for the Office of International Oversight and Assurance, IOPA. This office serves as our internal check on ourselves to ensure we maintain high levels of quality assurance and controls in the work of the PCAOB. IOPA provides an essential first-level independent review of all PCAOB activities. Taken together, the five-year strategic plan and 2010 budget provide the board direction and an allocation of funds for programs that I strongly support. In particular, both the board's strategic plan and the 2010 narrative make clear that the board intends to continue to consult with the SEC about its plans with regard to the recommendations of the Treasury Advisory Committee on the auditing profession. While the board has begun the process of taking up some of the Treasury Committee's recommendations, including the development of a national fraud center, we have not taken up a number of those I consider to be the most important. Recommendations I believe the board should consider in 2010 include requiring the larger auditing firms to file on a confidential basis audited financial statements with the PCAOB, monitoring sources of catastrophic risk, undertaking a standard-setting initiative to improve the auditor's reporting model, and certifying in the auditor's report the auditor's role and limitation in detecting fraud under current auditing standards. As I stated in previous board meetings, I believe that the board should know more about the financial conditions of the firms we regulate, and investors want more information than they receive from current pass-fail audit reports. I would note that the strategic plan and budget we are voting on today makes active consideration of all the Treasury Advisory Committee's proposals possible and hopefully probable in the coming year. Both the strategic plan and budget also direct the board to consider risks associated with the global networks of registered accounting firms. Specifically, the strategic plan requires that the board identify and evaluate risks associated with global networks of firms and determine appropriate PCAOB action to adjust such risks, including by considering appropriate standards on quality control. I have heard from numerous thoughtful commentators that there is currently a regulatory gap with respect to the firms that manage international audit networks, and that as a first step, we should consider improving our knowledge of the structure, operation, and governance of these networks. Both the strategic plan and the budget recognize this critical need. The strategic plan and budget also recognize the PCAOB's commitment to enhance transparency with respect to its programs. For example, in the budget we state that the Office of General Counsel will work on approaches to providing the public with clear information about the scope of these boards' inspection authorities as it relates to different categories of registered firms and providing additional transparency about the inspection status of firms. This follows our recent initiative to more clearly disclose on our website the names of firms that have failed to address quality control criticism satisfactorily as prescribed by the Act. The board soon will be considering other transparency initiatives for the benefit of investors and issuers, including one to disclose firms that have registered with the PCAOB but have not been inspected. The budget states that in 2010, the inspection division expects to have made recommendations to the board regarding the sufficiency of approximately 10 annual firms' remediation quality control criticisms of potential defects that were included in the reports to the 2008 inspections. The division also expects to make recommendations regarding the remediation of quality control criticisms or potential defects that were included in more than 90 triennial firm inspection reports. Related to triennial firm inspections conducted in 2006, 2007, 2008, and 2009. I continue to feel strongly that we must explore new ways to make certain that firms address in a more timely fashion quality control issues reported in inspection reports. Section 109C2 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act requires the PCAOB to use the money penalties it assesses on registered firms in enforcement proceedings to, quote, fund a merit scholarship program for undergraduate and graduate students enrolled in accredited accounting degree programs, close quote. The strategic plan requires that the board not only develop, but also implement this program, which in my opinion is long overdue. In the strategic plan and budget, the board also recognizes that its staff should bring a diversity of experiences, skills, cultures, and backgrounds to the PCAOB. As you know, Mr. Chairman, I strongly endorse this commitment to enhance the inclusive nature and diversity of the board staff. Finally, I would note that the board has established the Investment Advisory Group, which will provide a vital investor perspective on appropriate topics related to the board's programs. Investors are the PCAOB's most important stakeholder, and I look forward to chairing this group and hearing their views. The SEC has exercised its plenary authority regarding the development of the strategic plan and budget we are voting on today, and I want to acknowledge their contribution ensuring that we utilize our resources wisely. In particular, I would like to commend you, Mr. Chairman, and Bill Wiggins, Yas Mizagian, Lily Lynn, Daryl Pauly, Robin Smith, Phoebe Brown, Samantha Ross, Joanne Hinman, and all those who worked on these projects for a strategic plan and budget process that was not only comprehensive and inclusive, but also responsive to a diverse set of priorities. You handled all the demands and pressures of putting these packages together with patience, open-mindedness, and professionalism. I especially want to recognize Bill Wiggins for his yeoman service. I also join you in acknowledging and thanking our former chairman, Mark Olson, and his chief of staff, Angela Desmond, for laying such a solid foundation for our work today. In conclusion, the strategic plan and budget address and fund work on a number of key issues I have focused on at the PCAOB over the past year, and I appreciate that they have been recognized as priorities for 2010 and beyond. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to join, first of all, with my colleagues in thanking all the staff that has been involved in this process over such a long period of time, and use that as an opportunity to make brief reference to the budget process itself. I think it's fair to say that the current process which we have was not without controversy when it was originally adopted, but I think it has proven that the system works, and it has worked very well. Prior to the present process going into effect, we had several years in which the formal SEC approval of our budget did not take place until well into our calendar or fiscal year, which is, of course, not an ideal way to run an organization. Congress seems to do it almost every year, but I don't think we should necessarily consider that an ideal model. One of the elements of this budget process, and frankly one which I suggested to the SEC when they were, and they agreed with, when the current budget process is being adopted, was this March 15th date. Now, one can easily say, you know, here we are, it's going to be December when our SEC hopefully approves our budget, and we're going to start right away all over again with March 15th? The answer is absolutely, because budgeting is an ongoing process. It isn't something you just pick up and do to meet a calendar year requirement. It involves an ongoing effort, and one which has been extremely well managed by the people who are sitting in front of us today. I think that the entire organization should be proud of the stewardship which it has had over the resources made available to us by the SEC and, of course, under the statute by the Congress. Budgeting, of course, is really the heart of policymaking in a very real sense. The policymaking which is being made today in this meeting will probably be the most important policymaking that this board makes until the next year that we go through this cycle again, because it involves the allocation of scarce resources. In other words, setting priorities and making tough choices. And from that point on, we have a blueprint which I know our staff will ably manage. I do want to reflect a little, because I won't be involved in this next cycle, but like several of my colleagues I've been through, those in the past, about why this budget is very different, in my opinion, from any of the others that we've had so far. Up until now, our constraint was not dollars. Up until now, our constraint was hiring, staffing. That's changed. And the numbers presented by Bill and reflected in these documents indicate that is the case. What this says to me is that we very well, as an organization, may be entering into a period in which we find that the resources made available may not be, in the future, all that we would like in order to meet our hiring goals. In other words, in the past, we were struggling to effectively and wisely spend the money made available. That could switch in a direction. Furthermore, while I certainly don't have a crystal ball, I think it's unlikely that the PCOB is going to be immune from influences which may affect the resources made available to governmentally created organizations in general in the years ahead. If anything, with regard to the PCOB, what the Congress is considering right now is how widely to expand our responsibilities. Yes, there is a question about internal controls of smaller public companies, and I recognize that. But I think in the bigger sense of things, the question of how far the Congress chooses to have this organization go with regard to non-public broker-dealers reflects just the question of how wide this door is going to be opened, how much more broadly are the responsibilities going to be. Because there we're talking about entirely new set of standards, a new billing procedure, new inspection protocol, something, it isn't just expanding what we've been doing, but just doing something very different. So in a very real sense, I think the PCOB may find itself in a situation, I don't say it's never happened, but I think in a clearly defined situation of being asked to do more, not necessarily more with less, but more with less than the organization and the future boards may feel necessary to carry out its job, which I think simply, circling back to what I said before, heightens the importance of careful stewardship of the resources which this budget and this strategic plan will make available. Again, thanks to all of you for bringing us to this day.
Thank you, Mr. Granite. Mr. Newman.
Well, I also would like to thank the staff who worked on the proposed budget before us. Bill Wiggins, Gus Masagian, Lily Lynn, Daryl Pauley, Mark Stewart, the division heads and their assistants. I support the proposed 2010 budget. In past years, I've expressed concern about whether the PCOB has appropriately assessed certain risks, in particular international risk. The board spent considerable time and effort this past spring to reallocate its 2009 budget to assess these risks. As a result, we've established a dedicated infrastructure to plan and oversee non-U.S. inspections. We've also deepened our focus on risk associated with non-U.S. work. We now involve the Office of Research and Analysis in planning non-U.S. inspections. In addition, we have begun to collect information on referral work performed on large multinational audits. This budget does a much better job of matching resources to the international risk we've identified. The budget also allocates resources to inspecting first-time audits of internal control over financial reporting by non-accelerated SEC filers. These early inspections will provide the board with valuable information to help establish a continuous program to encourage high-quality effective work. The positions are funded but not included in the estimated end-of-year headcount of 355 inspection staff. As I understand it, the 355 personnel estimate provided in the budget is based on certain assumptions related to vacancies and turnover, which could turn out to be different in reality. Meanwhile, adding up all the components of the budget leads to 360 inspection positions and 641 overall headcount. Daryl, could you confirm that the budget provides funding for all 360 inspection positions and 641 overall positions?
Yeah, Charlie, I think the best way to provide that assurance is perhaps to go back to something Bill said, that the budget is, in fact, a blueprint. and it is a plan that we will start the year with, but we will have, there is no doubt, opportunities to exercise flexibility within that budget. You indicated that the timing of hires and other factors. Those of us who have considered this this question already have looked at the infections budget, and we do believe that we will have ample opportunity to exercise flexibility in that budget to respond to those resource demands within the budget authorization that we're asking for you to approve today.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. In these areas and others, the proposed budget does a better job than ever at identifying risk and allocating resources purposefully to address those risks. There are two areas, though, that continue to present some difficulties to me. First, I'm disappointed in our IT program and that it continues to have problems. I'm encouraged that the PCOB may finally establish a system to maintain and analyze inspection data. But in that regard, we're years behind where we should be. And other projects, such as the annual and special reporting system and the website redesign, have experienced extensive delays and cost overruns. Next year will need to be a year of reevaluation and rebuilding in these areas. The other area of the budget that has given me some trouble is travel. Travel is one of the most significant components of our budget because inspectors and investigators routinely need to travel to do their work. My concern lies in the area of non-program travel. Board members and program leaders should be accessible to the public, and sometimes that requires traveling to make presentations or participate in panels and other meetings. We need to be mindful, though, that our budget is funded by other people's money, namely the owners of public companies. I'm not comfortable with certain of the proposed trips and that some of the conferences do not appear to be related to public company accounting and auditing. After discussing these trips with the Chief Administrative Officer last week, I understand that we will not include them in the recommendation today, rather that you're seeking authorization to establish a pool of funds for non-program travel overall. And I understand that you will shortly come back to the board with a recommendation on criteria for evaluating and pre-approving individual proposed non-program trips. Daryl, could you confirm my understanding of the approval you're seeking and your intent to make a further recommendation to the board?
Yes, I can provide that confirmation. A number of board members have expressed concern, asked questions about the travel budget in general, but more specifically the non-program travel. And as a matter of fact, the SEC had also asked us to take a look at that. I am following up, as board members have requested, to take a look at the outreach activities on behalf of the organization with the intent of coming back to the board for a board discussion and guidance on that, and then after that we'll take a look at the specific trips that are included in the budget to determine if they are going to be consistent with the criteria that we will ask the board to approve.
Okay, thank you, Daryl. I do think an overall reevaluation of the non-program travel is a good idea, and overall I believe the budget is appropriate. Again, I appreciate the hard work of the staff that went into this effort and developing the budget, and offered my support. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Niemeyer. Let me ask you just a couple of things to bring up some points that haven't been covered. There's been a lot of talk this morning about the level of funding that we need for next year and the fact that there's an increase over this year. As I understand it, we're actually going to underspend this year's budget by roughly 5%. Why didn't we need all the money that we had here a year ago and approved for this year, and now the same factor is going to mean that we'll underspend next year's budget?
These are two primary reasons why we will underspend the 2009 budget. The first and dominant factor relates to the timing of hires. We're going to end the year with more staff than we projected originally, but those staff have come on much later in the year than we had projected the original total. So that results in an underspend. It actually is going to it factors into how much we need for 2010 because we've added all these staff late in the year. But basically, if you don't hire early in the year when you think you do, from a spending perspective, it's very hard to catch up. But given the success we've had recently, we certainly wouldn't foresee that happening magnitude, if at all, next year. The second area where we are going to have some underspending related actually to travel. And there is some measure of uncertainty and unpredictability in travel, so as it relates to the countries that inspections business is able to get into. Our assumption in the budget is that they will be able to get into everywhere that they need to go, and therefore, as constructed in the budget, we wouldn't assume an underspend there. So things can change over the course of the year, but I certainly think we will underspend less than we have, if at all, in prior years.
Your answer kind of anticipates the other thing that I wanted to ask of, and I guess this point has been brought out already, but again, the budget we sat here and approved a year ago envisioned that we would end 2009 with a headcount of 531. As I understand it, now we're anticipating ending this year with a headcount of 576. It's 45 people more than the current budget anticipated. The first thing to say about that is that it's a remarkable reversal of our past performance, where shortfall in spending has generally been based on the fact that we've had trouble hiring the people we need projected to hire. But again, you might touch on the impact of this over-hiring, if you want to call it that, on our 2009 budget and 2010 budget. As I understand it, it has a minimal impact on 2009 expenditures, but of course a significant impact on 2010 expenditures.
We hired the majority of the increase above the 2009 approved level during the second half of the year. Let's just, on average, say that the increase above came on board evenly throughout the second half of the year. Mathematically, that means you basically only need a quarter year salary for any one of those new hires. So again, it is a very small amount. So if we hired 60 more, that means it really is only costing us the equivalent of 15 more. But it flips the other way in 2010, which is you need to have 12 months of salary for everyone. So you need to add the 75% you didn't have. That's a factor in particular for the first 5 months of the year when we don't have any cash coming in the door and we're relying solely on our working capital reserve. But we can accommodate that in 2010. So I think that covers most of it. But again, where we start this year factors into merit pay increases and again, the full year cost.
It does seem to me that in a sense, what we've done here is pull into 2009 hiring that we would otherwise have done in 2010. And again, that doesn't have much of an impact on the 2009 budget, but since those folks do have to be paid throughout 2010, it does account for some significant part of the increase in next year's budget. There's also been some discussion about the broker-dealer auditors. There's legislation pending in Congress called the Investor Protection Act that would give us the authority, responsibility to inspect, set standards for, and bring enforcement proceedings as to the auditors of non-public broker-dealers. We already have the registration responsibility. How does that potential responsibility affect the 2010 budget?
Well, I guess I would start by saying there's a good discussion of this in the legislative section of the environmental factors portion of both the budget and the strategic plan. With regard to the actual numbers, the budget doesn't presume any resources for any expansions in authority relating to broker-dealer auditors. The legislation is still moving around, so it's been difficult for us to develop an estimate of what it could mean for the organization, but we're going to continue to work with divisions and offices to refine it as things settle down in Congress. To the extent that something is enacted and additional resources are required, we certainly will come back to the board to discuss our options, which range either from perhaps seeking a supplemental or reallocating funds in 2010 if necessary, or putting resources into the budget that's developed for 2001.
Thank you. Let me ask about one where Congress might or might not go in the other direction, and Mr. Niemeyer touched on this. What does the budget assume about non-accelerated filers coming into internal control auditing, and how does that affect our inspection program and inspection expenditures in 2010?
I think the best group to have answer this directly would be inspection, so I don't want to speak for them. I'm going to have them address your question.
Sure, please.
We're assuming in 2010 we're going to begin the process of developing a program for conducting inspections and internal controls for non-accelerated filers. Among other things, this is going to mean that we're going to have to develop this program, get the program approved by the board. We're going to have training for our staff in the conduct of those inspections. And then we're going to have to identify certain of the non-accelerated filers audits and conduct inspections of those audits to see how this approach actually works. It'll be fundamentally in this in 2010 a kind of a pilot program of the inspections of the audits of the non-accelerated filers. From a approach of the budget, there may be some additional funds necessary, but we believe that those additional funds can be obtained in connection with the inspection process as a result of some delays in hiring that may occur in the first part of the first quarter of 2010. So fundamentally, I believe we have enough funds to be able to conduct the training, the identification of the program that we need to get the approval to conduct the pilot program of the non-accelerated bonds.
And again, just to tie to Charlie's comments, that's what we're projecting for that are the five positions that we spoke about. And since the things stand now, the SEC has said that the requirement is going into effect for companies with fiscal years ending after June 15th of 2010.
That's correct.
This is essentially a second half of the year activity. To the extent that we'd be looking at actual non-accelerated filer internal control audits, that it has to happen fairly late in the year, because by definition it would just be the companies with fiscal years ending June 30th.
Right, June 30th, and then there would be a period of time before, after those audits were conducted, before those financial statements would be finalized. And so you've been talking about largely those non-accelerated filers that occur for audits that as of June 30th, but really don't come into fruition, say, after around September of the of that year of 2010.
While you're standing there, George, maybe this is one for you also, but I think several of us have alluded during the day today to increases of documentation in the inspection program. I wonder if you can comment just generally about what that entails and what the budgetary impact of that is.
The increase in documentation comes in the first instance as a result of the inspection by the Securities Exchange Commission, and they made significant recommendations on how we should increase our documentation. And we started in 2009 with a pilot program to determine, and a pilot program affecting our large firm and our small firm and our international firms, to determine how we could essentially execute on the recommendations by the SEC in a way that would improve the documentation of the inspections in the three programs, but not do so in a way that detracted from our ability to actually execute those inspections. It was a very complicated process, so the pilot program started in 2009. We're going to continue it in the 2010, and as a result of that program and an analysis that we get from that program, we're going to change our documentation, our large firm, small firm, international documentation. Commence training of our staff so that they understand how the new documentation program will be applied, and then execute it as we conduct our inspections in the latter part of 2010.
From my perspective, you can tell me if you think this is right or wrong, but we started out with the theory that our documentation should aim primarily at supporting the comments and criticisms that we made in the inspection report. And I think now with some prodding, maybe more than a little prodding from the SEC, we've come to the view that the documentation perhaps also has to be a little stronger about how we decided what areas to look at in an engagement, and perhaps in some cases why we decided not to pursue.
That's exactly right. Initially, the concern was that we had to be sure that we created a record of the deficiencies that we identified in connection with the inspection, whether they were accounting or auditing deficiencies or failure to comply with SEC requirements. And we were really looking to being able to sustain the problems that we identified in connection with the audits and sustain them in connection with our interaction with the firms and the remediations that occurred with the firms, but also sustaining it to the extent that the firms decided to appeal to the SEC. And we had to sustain the burden of proof that we were right with respect to the deficiencies that have been identified in an SEC hearing.
A couple things about the foreign inspection program. I mean, something else we did about a year ago at this time was to adopt a rule that deferred, I think, 50 first inspections that were supposed to occur this year so that they could take place over the next 3 years. I know the SEC's published that rule for a time, and I don't think they've actually approved it yet. What does the budget assume about that rule?
Well,
yeah,
Wiggins looks back here, and I'm
that's right. Yeah,
they part of the budget for the decision.
The short answer is that the budget assumes the amendments will be approved by the commission. But to the extent they're not, could have changes in time and resource implications or otherwise, but we assume that they will occur.
Well, it looks like it's on track to be approved. Now, I take it the way we've conducted the program this year also has assumed that it will be approved. I'm kind of on the other side of the coin. Something we didn't anticipate a year ago is that there is now a moratorium that's preventing us from conducting any inspections in the EU until Congress adopts legislation that lets us share certain non-public inspection information with our foreign colleagues. How has that affected, 2009 spending, and how does the budget assume the projector would affect 2010 foreign inspection?
I guess during the third quarter, and I don't want to summarize. The determination was that it was highly unlikely that we would get into the EU and several other jurisdictions. So what the Division of Registration Inspections did was pull forward into 2009 certain non-U.S. inspections that had been planned for 2010. So basically it was because resources were available to conduct them, to conduct inspections, they thought it was appropriate to basically change the mix between years. So had they not done that, perhaps it could affect the underspend or just the overall number of countries that would get into this year. But since they did that, we were able to conduct not as many as we thought, but still some in 2009 non-U.S. inspections. But it changes the mix for 2010. Which means that there's arguably somewhat of a bubble that needs to be accommodated in next year's budget, both with respect to the total and the mix and complexity of the specific inspections to be conducted.
So the budget, the 2010 budget, does assume that our issues with the EU will be resolved and will pick up next year. Those EU inspections we should have done this year, and I think those are also the ones that were originally projected to be done.
That's exactly right.
Just finally, I think Bill's comments reflected that most of our funding does come from public companies. Congress enacted funding on the assumption or on the principle that public companies benefit from the audit process and the access to the capital markets that affords, and therefore they should provide most of our funding. We do have some funding from accounting firms, both in the form of registration fees and annual and special reporting. I was wondering if you could comment on how those things affect the 2010 budget. I mean, in particular, we're probably looking now at something like 400 or 500 additional firms registering with us during 2009 because of the broker-dealer, non-public broker-dealer monitor registration requirement, which I'm not sure that was fully anticipated last year. I don't know if that produced a bonanza in registration fees for us or not, maybe a mini bonanza. And then on the other hand, annual and special reporting for all of the registered firms, again, which now is a universe of what that is. 2,600, maybe some of them are going to be inside of 3,000. But the dealer firms will start next year, and there'll be a fee associated with that process. And therefore, what are the budget impacts?
Sure, if I can kind of break it up a little bit. The first, a general statement is that all registration and annual fees are applied to the subsequent budget year in which they're collected. So in fees collected in 2009 apply to next year's budget, 2010. When we were putting the budget together in the summer, I believe we had a preliminary estimate of roughly $40,000 in this category. There have been more fees collected as a result of increased registrations for broker-dealer auditors. Through the third quarter, we've collected about $112,000. So that's factored into the 2010 numbers today in terms of accounting support fee. To the extent that there
is a fairly unique
out of a support fee of $178.1 million, yeah, very small. To the extent that there continues to be an increase in registrations in 2010, again, those would apply to 2011. With regard to those fees as well, they're to be limited to the cost of recovering the cost of processing, reviewing applications, and in reports and development of a new system. So they're kind of segregated. Not specifically in the total, but for their use.
In that connection, my recollection is the board has not yet established the fee for the annual and special reporting that has yet to be done. But would you comment on the extent to which the costs that you just referred to, which would be allocated under that annual and special reporting, should or should not include all the IT work that's been done over the years in preparation for the implementation of the annual special report?
I think if I can, Gordon would like to step in on
sure.
this one.
To answer your question, I think in a general sense, yes. As Bill described, the Act requires the annual reporting fee, like the registration fee, to cover the costs of processing and reviewing. In this case, annual reports, and therefore there is an IT component to those costs. The details, of course, have to be considered by the board in connection with actually setting the annual reporting fee. And as both you and I think Bill have reflected, that's something we'd expect the board to do probably in the first quarter of next year in anticipating of the first annual reports and therefore fees being due during the summer of 2010.
Thank you.
I don't have anything else. Any other board members want to raise any points? If not, I think we're ready for a vote on the 2010 budget. All in favor of approving the budget, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, say no. The motion is carried unanimously, and the 2010 budget is approved by the board and submitted to the SEC for its approval. That concludes our agenda today. The meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.